So continuing on with the with these suttas that illustrate the five hindrances. The next hindrance is the udicca, kukucca, restlessness and remorse. And it wasn't so easy finding suttas for, or ones that I liked anyway. I found a couple short ones, and one, the first one I found, isn't restlessness per se, but it kind of typifies it's. There's a translation of the word excitement, which is actually comes from the Pali as anupasama, which means sort of non-peace. So that, that definitely works for restlessness. It's definitely non-peaceful. This Anguttara Fours. Sutta number 128. Bhikkhus, with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, four astounding and amazing things become manifest. What for? 1. People delight in attachment, take delight in attachment, rejoice in attachment. But when a Tathagata is teaching the Dhamma about non-attachment, people wish to listen and lend an ear, and set their minds on understanding it. This is the first astounding and amazing thing that becomes manifest with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. 2. People delight in conceit, take delight in conceit, rejoice in conceit. But when a Tathagata is teaching the Dhamma for the removal of conceit, people wish to listen, and they lend an ear and set their minds on understanding it. This is the second astounding and amazing thing that becomes manifest with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. 3. People delight in excitement, take delight in excitement, rejoice in excitement. But when a Tathagata is teaching the Dhamma that leads to peace, people wish to listen, and they lend an ear and set their minds on understanding it. This is the third astounding and amazing thing that becomes manifest with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. 4. People are immersed in ignorance, become like an egg, completely enveloped. But when a Tathagata is teaching a Dhamma for the removal of ignorance, people wish to listen, and they lend an ear and set their minds on understanding it. This is the fourth astounding and amazing thing that becomes manifest with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. These bhikkhus are the four astounding and amazing things that become manifest with the manifestation of a Tathagata, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. Any questions, comments on that? It's pretty straightforward. Pretty nice.
I heard that image of the ignorance
of
encasing yourself in your shell.
Like an egg. this next sutta is from the Majjhima Nikaya, Majjhima 23, the anthill. And it's kind of a strange little sutta. And it begins with the simile pointing to kind of uncontrolled thinking, really. It seemed to work with restlessness and remorse. And an early translation of udicca kukucca was worry and flurry, which was kind of nice. Points to that at the beginning, particularly, but it carries on. Also, it's such a curious sutta that I couldn't help but read it. Thus have I heard, On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. Now, on that occasion, the Venerable Kumara Kassapa was living in the blind man's grove. Then, when the night was well advanced, a certain deity, a beautiful appearance, who illuminated the whole of the blind man's grove, approached the Venerable Kumara Kassapa and stood at one side. So standing, the deity said to him, "Bhikkhu, Bhikkhu, this anthill fumes by night and flames by day." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a bar. "A bar, O venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the bar. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a toad. "A toad, venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the toad. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a fork. "A fork, venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the fork. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a sieve. "A sieve, venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the sieve. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a tortoise. "A tortoise, venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the tortoise. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a butcher's knife and block. "A butcher's knife and block, O venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the butcher's knife and block. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a piece of meat. "A piece of meat, O venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Throw out the piece of meat. Delve with the knife, thou wise one." Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a naga serpent. "A naga serpent, venerable sir." Thus spoke the Brahman, "Leave the naga serpent. Do not harm the naga serpent. Honor the naga serpent. Bhikkhu, you should go to the Blessed One and ask him about this riddle. As the Blessed One tells you, so should you remember it. Bhikkhu, other than the Tathagata or disciple of the Tathagata or one who has learned it from them, I see no one in this world with its gods, its Maras, and its Brahmas, in this generation with its recluses and Brahmins, its princes and its people, whose explanation of this riddle might satisfy the mind." This is what was said by the deity, who thereupon vanished at once. That would make for an interesting night. So, then, when the night was over, the Venerable Kumara Kassapa went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and told the Blessed One what had occurred. Then he asked, "Venerable Sir, what is the anthill? What the fuming by night? What the flaming by day? Who is the Brahman? Who the wise one? What is the knife? What the delving? What the bar? What the toad? What the fork? What the sieve? What the tortoise? What the butcher's knife and block? What the piece of meat? What the naga serpent?" "Bhikkhu, the anthill is a symbol for this body, made of material form, consisting of the four great elements, procreated by a mother and father, built up out of boiled rice and porridge, and subject to impermanence, being worn and rubbed away, to dissolution and disintegration. What one thinks and ponders by night, based upon one's actions during the day, is the fuming by night. The actions one undertakes during the day by body, speech, and mind, after thinking and pondering by night, is the flaming by day. The Brahman is a symbol for the Tathagata, accomplished and fully enlightened. The wise one is a symbol for a bhikkhu in higher training. The knife is a symbol for noble wisdom. The delving is a symbol for the arousing of energy. The bar is a symbol for ignorance. Throw out the bar. Abandon ignorance. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. This is the meaning. The toad is a symbol for anger and irritation. Throw out the toad. Abandon anger and irritation. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. This is the meaning. The fork is a symbol for doubt. Throw out the fork, abandon doubt, delve with the knife, the wise one. This is the meaning. The sieve is a symbol for the five hindrances, namely, the hindrance of sensual desire, the hindrance of ill will, the hindrance of sloth and torpor, the hindrance of restlessness and remorse, and the hindrance of doubt. Throw out the sieve, abandon the five hindrances, delve with the knife, the wise one. This is the meaning. The tortoise is a symbol for the five aggregates affected by clinging, namely, the material form, aggregate affected by clinging, the feeling aggregate affected by clinging, the perception aggregate affected by clinging, the formations aggregate affected by clinging, and the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging. Throw out the tortoise, abandon the five aggregates affected by clinging, delve with the knife, the wise one, this is the meaning. The butcher's knife and block is a symbol for the five cords of sensual pleasure. Forms cognizable by the eye that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. Sounds cognizable by the ear, odors cognizable by the nose, flavors cognizable by the tongue, tangibles cognizable by the body that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. Throw out the butcher's knife and block. Abandon the five cords of sensual pleasure. Delve with the knife. Thou wise one, this is the meaning. The piece of meat is a symbol for delight and lust. Throw out the piece of meat. Abandon delight and lust. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. This is the meaning. The Naga serpent is a symbol for a bhikkhu who has destroyed the taints. Leave the Naga serpent. Do not harm the Naga serpent. Honor the Naga serpent. This is the meaning. That is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Kumara Kassapa was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So, nice little story.
Still, I mean, I think of the butcher's block and knife as a symbol for five chords of sensuality. I don't know how those are connected.
I don't quite get that myself, even. Because it oftentimes when it's, other than the, you know, the actual act of cutting off those cords of sensual pleasure, in the sense of a knife and block being able to cut, but actually typifying five things, five objects, that didn't seem to do that. But the cord of certainly the in terms of when you say there's a cord of sensual pleasure, then you've got a knife and a block that you could be cutting that with. Yeah.
And then also maybe the sieve is a symbol for the
five hindrances. Oh, I think that as a symbol is quite good, in the sense of that's where. All your goodness leaks out. That's where all your goodness, all your kind of peacefulness and collectedness just keeps leaking out. I mean, oftentimes, especially in Thailand, I use that image of the five hindrances of trying to collect. Because in Thailand, you're always collecting rainwater, collecting water, and so it's like collecting water in a bucket with a rusty bucket with holes in it, just seeping out all the time, or a big jar that's cracked and just water just keeps seeping out all the time. So same with those five hindrances are just your collectedness and mindfulness and awareness just keep leaking out all over the place. Leaking out in those five ways for sure.
Scott, while you're explaining about meat and sensual.
certainly the piece of meat is an image that the Buddha uses in a couple places. So particularly like a piece of meat, and then the then you know, all these birds and vultures sort of descend on it and fight over it, and it ends up, you know, nobody ends up getting satisfied. A piece of meat falls to the ground, the birds are all scratched, and so it's just the incredible hassle of dealing with sensual craving.
Okay, the fork and doubt.
Oh, the fork, and well, that's the fork is that, you know, it's just going, you know, there's, you've got tines that are going off, you know, a couple different tines, so it's not one thing.
That was like your sensual desires for eating that piece of meat.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it certainly works when you've got a butcher block right nearby. Oh, how it's being in debt? Well, I mean, there's, you know, in the sense that when one is in debt, then you're always, one, you're having to worry about your debt being called in, and so you're never really, and then you're also, when you're in debt, you're also relying on, you know, other your resources other than your own, so that for with sensual desire, then you're constantly relying on something else as a bridge to your well-being and happiness, so that but it's never yours, and it's not it's taken from something else, so you're relying on sensual pleasures and that fascination for one's well-being, but in reality, it's, you know, it's not yours. So whenever the creditor shows up, then you're left with nothing. Okay, so the next sutta is with the last hindrance of vichikicca, doubt, and this particular sutta stood out for me because of the and again, it was sort of, how do I? Because usually when with doubt, oftentimes it's kind of just sort of matter-of-factly stated, and then there's not much explanation. The advice of how to overcome doubt, the study of the teachings is important. So that this sutta in particular, I thought, was helpful for doubts allayed by a clarification of the teachings and really laying it out. And in this sutta, the Buddha is, you know, in his typical way, quite precise in defining his range of meaning and how the teachings are applied, and particularly as this sutta begins with somebody who has kind of obviously got a doubt about the Buddha. Well, anyway, I'll read the sutta, and then we'll see where we end up with this. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Koliyans, where there was a town of the Koliyans named Uttara. Then Patalaya, the headman, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, I have heard, Venerable Sir, the ascetic Gotama knows magic. I hope, Venerable Sir, that those who say the ascetic Gotama knows magic state what has been said by the Blessed One and do not misrepresent him with what is contrary to fact, that they explain in accordance with the Dhamma and that no reasonable consequence of their assertion gives ground for criticism, for we would not wish to misrepresent the Blessed One, Venerable Sir. Those headmen who say the ascetic Gotama knows magic state what has been said by me and do not misrepresent me with what is contrary to fact. They explain in accordance with the Dhamma, and no reasonable consequence of their assertion gives rise for criticism. Then, sir, we did not believe the plain truth asserted by those ascetics and Brahmins who said, the ascetic Gotama knows magic. Indeed, sir, the ascetic Gotama is a magician. Headman, does one who asserts, I know magic, also assert, I am a magician? So it is, Blessed One. So it is, Fortunate One. Well then, Headman, I will question you about this same matter. Answer as you see fit. What do you think, Headman? Do you know the Kolians, hirelings with drooping headdresses? And this is a... Rhys Davids has... interprets this passage in his Buddhist India. Was called, the Kolian central authorities were served by a special body of police distinguished by a kind of uniform from which they took their name, by special headdress. These particular men had a bad reputation for extortion and violence. So that's, it's not referring to somebody interesting or good. Do you know the Kolians hirelings with drooping headdresses? I do, Venerable Sir. Do you think, Headman, what is the job of the Kolians hirelings with drooping headdresses? The job, Venerable Sir, is to arrest thieves for the Kolians and to carry the Kolians' messages. What do you think, Headman? Do you know whether the Kolians hirelings with drooping headdresses are virtuous or immoral? I know, Venerable Sir, that they are immoral, of bad character. They are to be included among those in the world who are immoral, of bad character. Would one be speaking rightly, Headman, if one were to say, Paataliya, the headman knows the Kolians, hirelings, with drooping headdresses, who are immoral, of bad character. Paataliya, the headman, too, is immoral, of bad character. No, Venerable Sir, I am quite different from the Kolians, hirelings, with drooping headdresses. My character is quite different from theirs. If, Headman, it can be said about you, Paataliya, the headman, knows the Kolians, hirelings with drooping headdresses, who are immoral, a bad character, but Paataliya, the headman, is not immoral, a bad character, then why can't it be said about the Tathagata? The Tathagata knows magic, but the Tathagata is not a magician. I understand magic, headman, and the result of magic, and I understand how a magician, faring along with the breakup of the body after death, is reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the netherworld, in hell. I understand, headman, the destruction of life and the result of the destruction of life, and I understand how one who destroys life, faring along with the breakup of the body after death, is reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the netherworld, in hell. I understand, headman, the taking of what is not given, sexual misconduct, false speech, divisive speech, harsh speech, idle chatter, covetousness, ill will and hatred, wrong view, and the result of wrong view. And I understand how one who holds wrong view, faring along with the breakup of the body after death, is reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in another world, in hell. There are, headmen, some ascetics and Brahmins who hold such a doctrine and view as this. Anyone at all who destroys life experiences pain and grief in this very life. Anyone at all who takes what is not given, who engages in sexual misconduct, who speaks falsely, experiences pain and grief in this very life. Someone here, headman, is seen garlanded and adorned, freshly bathed and groomed. with hair and beard trimmed, enjoying sensual pleasures with women as if he were a king. They asked someone about him, "Sir, what has this man done that he has been garlanded and adorned, enjoying sensual pleasures with women as if he were a king?" They answer, "Sir, this man attacked the king's enemy and took his life. The king was pleased with him and bestowed a reward upon him. That is why this man is garlanded and adorned, enjoying sensual pleasures with women as if he were a king." "Then, headman, someone here is seen with his arms tightly bound behind him, with a strong rope, his head shaven, being led around from street to street, from square to square, to the ominous beating of a drum, and then taken out through the south gate and beheaded to the south of the city." They asked someone about him, "Sir, what has this man done, that with his arms tightly tied behind his back, he is beheaded to the south of the city?" They answer, "Sir, this man, an enemy of the king, has taken the life of a man or a woman. That is why the rulers, having had him arrested, impose such a punishment upon him." "What do you think, headman? Have you ever seen or heard of such a case?" "I've seen this, venerable sir, and I have heard of it, and I will hear of it still again." "Therein, headman, when those ascetics and Brahmins who hold such a doctrine and view as this say, 'Anyone at all who destroys life experiences pain and grief here and now,' do they speak truthfully or falsely?"
"Falsely, venerable sir."
"Are those who prattle empty falsehood virtuous or immoral?"
"Immoral, venerable sir."
"Are those who are immoral and of bad character practicing wrongly or rightly?"
"Practicing wrongly, venerable sir."
"Do those who are practicing wrongly hold wrong view or right view?"
"Wrong view, venerable sir."
"Is it proper to place confidence in those who hold wrong view?"
"No, venerable sir."
"Then, headman, someone here is seen garlanded and adorned, freshly bathed and groomed, with hair and beard trimmed, enjoying sensual pleasures with women as if he were a king. They ask someone about him, 'Sir, what has this man done, that he has been garlanded and adorned?' They answer, 'Sir, this man attacked the king's enemy and stole a gem. The king was pleased with him and bestowed a reward upon him. That is why this man is garlanded and adorned, enjoying sensual pleasures with women as if he were a king.' Then, headman, someone here is seen with his arms tightly bound behind him with a strong rope, his head shaven, being led around from street to street, from square to square, to the ominous beating of a drum, and then taken out through the south gate and beheaded to the south of the city. They ask someone about him, 'Sir, what has this man done, that with his arms tightly bound behind him, he is beheaded to the south of the city?" They answer, "Sir, this man, an enemy of the king, stole something from a village or a forest. He committed theft. That is why the rulers, having had him arrested, imposed such a punishment on him. What do you think, headman? Have you ever seen or heard of such a case?"
"I have seen this, venerable sir, and I have heard of it, and I will hear of it still again."
"Therein, headman, when those ascetics and Brahmins who hold such a doctrine and view as this say, 'Anyone at all who takes what is not given experiences pain and grief here and now,' do they speak truthfully or falsely?"
Is it proper
to place confidence in those who hold wrong view?"
"No, venerable sir."
So then it goes again of somebody who is freshly bathed and groomed, hair and beard, enjoying sensual pleasures. And then he's asked, why is he enjoying all these sensual pleasures? And they answer, "Sir, this man seduced the wives of the king's enemy. The king was pleased with him and bestowed a reward upon him. That is why this man is garlanded and adorned." And then going through the same thing, somebody's bound and taken out and beheaded. And they answer, "Sir, this man seduced women and girls of good families. That is why the rulers, having had him arrested, imposed such a punishment upon him." And then, "What do you think, headman? Have you ever seen or heard of such a case?" I have seen this, Venerable Sir, and I have heard of it, and I will hear of it still again. And then the same with the another person, garlanded and adorned, and enjoying himself, and then asking, why is this? And they answer, Sir, this man amused the king with false speech. The king was pleased with him and bestowed a reward upon him. That is why this man is garlanded and adorned. And then they see somebody else being tightly bound, taken out the south gate, beheaded south of the city, and asking why this is. They answer, Sir, this man has brought to ruin a householder or a householder's son with false speech. That is why the rulers, having had him arrested, imposed such a punishment upon him. What do you think, Edmund? Have you ever seen or heard of such a case? I have seen this, Venerable Sir, and I have heard of it, and I will hear of it still again. Therein, Edmund, when those ascetics and Brahmins who hold such a view and hold such a doctrine and view as this say, anyone at all who speaks falsely experiences pain and grief here and now. Do they speak truthfully or falsely? Is it proper to gain place confidence in those who hold wrong view? No, Venerable Sir. It is wonderful, Venerable Sir. It is amazing, Venerable Sir. I have a rest house in which there are beds, seats, a water pot, and an oil lamp. When any ascetic or Brahmin comes to reside there, then I share it with him to the best of my means and ability. In the past, Venerable Sir, four teachers, holding different views, with different convictions, different preferences, came to dwell in that rest house. One teacher held such a doctrine and view as this. There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing presented in charity, no fruit or result of good and bad actions, no this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no beings who are reborn spontaneously, no ascetics and Brahmins faring and practicing rightly in the world, who, having realized this world and the other world for themselves by direct knowledge, make them known to others. One teacher held such a doctrine and view as this. There is what is given, what is offered, what is presented in charity. There is fruit and result of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are ascetics and Brahmins faring and practicing rightly in the world who, having realized this world and the other world for themselves by direct knowledge, make them known to others. One teacher held such a doctrine and view as this. When one acts or makes others act, when one mutilates or makes others mutilate, when one tortures or makes others inflict torture, when one inflicts sorrow or makes others inflict sorrow, when one oppresses or makes others inflict oppression, when one intimidates or makes others inflict intimidation, when one destroys life, takes what is not given, breaks into houses, plunders wealth, commits burglary, ambushes highways, seduces another's wife, utters falsehood, no evil is done by the doer. If with a razor-rimmed wheel one were to make the living beings of this earth into one mass of flesh, into one heap of flesh, because of this, there would be no evil and no outcome of evil. If one were to go along the south bank of the Ganges, killing and slaughtering, mutilating and making others mutilate, torturing and making others inflict torture, because of this, there would be no evil and no outcome of evil. If one were to go along the north bank of the Ganges, giving gifts and making others give gifts, making offerings and making others make offerings, because of this, there would be no merit and no outcome of merit. By giving, by taming oneself, by self-control, by speaking truth, there is no merit and no outcome of merit. One teacher held such a doctrine and view as this. When one acts or makes others act, mutilates or makes others mutilate, so on, evil is done by the doer. If, with a razor-rimmed wheel, one were to make the living beings of this earth into one mass of flesh, one to go along the south bank of the Ganges, killing and slaughtering, torturing and make others inflict torture, because of this, there would be evil and an outcome of evil. If one were to go along the north bank of the Ganges, giving gifts and making others give gifts, making offerings and making others make offerings, because of this, there would be merit and an outcome of merit. By giving, by taming oneself, by self-control, by speaking truth, there is merit and an outcome of merit. There arose in me, venerable sir, the perplexity and doubt, which of these honorable ascetics and Brahmins speak truth and which speak falsehood. It is fitting for you to be perplexed, headman, fitting for you to doubt. Doubt has arisen in you about a perplexing matter. I have confidence in the Blessed One thus. The Blessed One is capable of teaching me the Dhamma in such a way that I might abandon this state of perplexity. There is, headman, concentration of the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, you might abandon this state of perplexity. And what, headman, is concentration of the Dhamma? Herein, headman, having abandoned the destruction of life, the noble disciple abstains from the destruction of life. Having abandoned the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given. Having abandoned sexual misconduct, he abstains from sexual misconduct. Having abandoned false speech, he abstains from false speech. Having abandoned divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech. Having abandoned harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. Having abandoned idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. Having abandoned covetousness, he is uncovetous. Having abandoned ill will and hatred, he has a mind without ill will. Having abandoned wrong view, he is one of right view. Then, headman, that noble disciple, who is thus devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere. And to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. He reflects thus, this teacher holds such a doctrine and view as this. There is nothing given, nothing offered, and so on through this classic definition of wrong view. No ascetics and Brahmins faring and practicing rightly in the world who, having realized this world and the other world for themselves by direct knowledge, make them known to others. If the word of this good teacher is true, for me it yet counts as incontrovertible that I do not oppress anyone, whether frail or firm. In both respects, I have made a lucky throw, since I am restrained in body, speech, and mind, and since, with the breakup of the body after death, I shall be reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. As he reflects thus, gladness is born. When one is gladdened, rapture is born. When the mind is elated by rapture, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body experiences happiness. The mind of one who is happy becomes concentrated. This, headman, is concentration of the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, you might abandon that state of perplexity. Then, headman, that noble disciple, who is thus devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, and through as we do in the chant, and without hostility, without ill will. He reflects thus, this teacher holds such a doctrine in view as this. There is what is given, there is what is offered. There are ascetics and Brahmins faring and practicing rightly in the world who, having realized this world and the other world for themselves by direct knowledge, make them known to others. If the word of this good teacher is true, for me it yet counts as incontrovertible that I do not oppress anyone, whether frail or firm. In both respects, I have made a lucky throw. Since I am restrained in body, speech, and mind, and since with the breakup of the body after death, I shall be reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. As it reflects thus, gladness is born. When one is gladdened, rapture is born. When the mind is elated by rapture, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body experiences happiness. The mind of one who is happy becomes concentrated. This headman is concentration of the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, you might abandon that state of perplexity. Then headman, that noble disciple who is devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, without hostility, without ill will. He reflects thus, this teacher holds such a doctrine and view as this, when one acts or makes others act, so on the whole statement of by giving, by taming oneself, by self-control, by speaking truth, there is no merit and no outcome of merit. And also no, there is no evil as well. If the word of this good teacher is true, for me it yet counts as incontrovertible that I do not oppress anyone, whether frail or firm. In both respects, I have made a lucky throw, since I am restrained in body, speech, and mind, and since with the breakup of the body after death, I shall be reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. As it reflects thus, gladness is born. When one is gladdened, rapture is born. When the mind is elated by rapture, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body experiences happiness. The mind of one who is happy becomes concentrated. This headman is concentration of the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, you might abandon that state of perplexity. Then headman, that noble disciple who is thus devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, without hostility, without ill will. He reflects thus. This teacher holds such a doctrine view as this. When one acts or makes others act, of course, and then affirming that there actually is evil, there is wrongdoing, and then by giving, by taming oneself, by self-control, by speaking truth, there is merit and an outcome of merit. If the word of this good teacher is true, for me it yet counts as incontrovertible that I do not oppress anyone, whether frail or firm. In both respects, I have made a lucky throw. Since I am restrained in body, speech, and mind, and since with the breakup of the body after death, I shall be reborn in a good destination in a heavenly world. As he reflects thus, gladness is born. When one is gladdened, rapture is born. When the mind is elated by rapture, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body experiences happiness. The mind of one who is happy becomes concentrated. This headman is concentration of the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, you might abandon that state of perplexity. Then headman, that noble disciple who is thus devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one mind at one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, with a mind imbued with altruistic joy, with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. And then, of course, reflecting on these different doctrines, and then obtaining concentration of the Dhamma. It reflects thus, so that after having gone through all that, again, with all the different Brahma-viharas, he reflects thus, this teacher holds such a doctrine and view as this, when one acts or makes others act, when one mutilates or makes others mutilate, there is evil. By giving, by taming oneself, by self-control, by speaking truth, there is merit and an outcome of merit. the word of this good teacher is true. For me, it yet counts as incontrovertible that I do not oppress anyone, whether frail or firm. In both respects, I have made a lucky throw. Since I am restrained in body, speech, and mind, and since, with the breakup of the body after death, I shall be reborn in a good destination in a heavenly world. As it reflects thus, gladness is born. When one is gladdened, rapture is born. When the mind is elated, by rapture, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body experiences happiness. The mind of one who is happy becomes concentrated. This headman is concentration based upon the Dhamma. If you were to obtain concentration of mind in that, then you might abandon that state of perplexity. When this was said, Paataliya, the headman, said to the Blessed One, Magnificent Venerable Sir, the Dhamma has been made clear in many ways by Master Gotama, as though he were turning upright what had been turned upside down, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see. Master Gotama, I go for refuge to the Blessed One and to the Dhamma and to the Bhikkhu Sangha. From today, let the Blessed One remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. So, let's say, I think one of the things that was interesting in that to me was the one is the Buddha's, it's always, to me it's always inspiring how the Buddha doesn't, his everything is defined really clearly, so that when, like knowing magic is one thing, and then being a magician is another. And that, because it's so easy to conflate things in the mind and make assumptions, and things bleed into each other. And the Buddha was extremely skillful in that, or clear in his mind, so that these different aspects of the teachings are then applied in their appropriate way. And then also how the Buddha comes back to, especially in terms of, because sometimes with view and doubt about view, view and doctrine, then it's easy to get caught up in the realm of ideas, but then the Buddha brings it back to conduct and then clarifying through the base of conduct, and he's clarifying the implications of view. So I think that's a really helpful, because it's so easy to get tangled up into the mind and thought and how doubt works, but then to come back to the basis of conduct or result of conduct is then illustrating the actual application of view. Yes.
And for me also, just how after reflection on the results of good conduct is the basis for samadhi.
Yes. That sila no sati is a, it's, how do you say, it's valid to be delighted of having been able to live skillfully and virtuously.
And that happens both ways, whether the the annihilationists are right, first one, or whether the
Whether they're right or not, he's holding to to keeping and holding good conduct. It's a, you know, so that that you know, I think it's a bit of a it is a little bit confusing, but I mean, I think it, in the sense of that, you know, whatever the doctrine is, one is holding to skillful conduct. One doesn't harm or oppress.
The same language is used in the Kama Sutta.
Yeah.
And the same logic, except yeah. The first case.
Yes.
Is presented. It doesn't use the center. It's only the second case where he's walking on both roads. In
yeah.
The first case in the Kama Sutta, the person reflects, well, even, you know, even if there is no rebirth, I'm still maintaining myself happily right now with good karma.
Yeah.
And if there is rebirth, yeah. then I'm you know, then I have made a lucky throw in both respects.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, that almost it would almost make more sense to put that same phrasing from the Kama Sutta here.
It would. But the point is more the you know, just that sense of recognizing how recognizing the results of actions and the results of view and the results of action. So that's where I'm sort of seeing in both roles in terms of view and action.